Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We are doing something a little different today. Usually we look at broad tech trends or maybe some history, but today I really want to transport us to a very specific, very high stakes moment in time. February 2026.
Which, if you're looking at your calendars right now.
Right, it's literally today. And I want you to picture this scenario. You are sitting on your couch. You've got your controller in hand, and you're about to boot up a brand new game. You've got your snacks, your drink.
The ideal setup.
Exactly. You think you're just about to have some fun, maybe slay a demon or solve a puzzle. But according to the stack of research we have today, you are actually sitting in the control room of the global economy.
It sounds totally hyperbolic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But that is the central premise of this report we're looking at. It's titled Gaming as a Financial Catalyst, and it focuses on the 2026 hardware supercycle.
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful, hardware supercycle. But the argument inside is just wild. It basically claims that video games have completely stopped being just entertainment. They are now the primary engine driving the Nasdaq Q and the Tokyo Stock Exchange.
It is a bold claim for sure,
Huh.
but when you strip away the marketing fluff and really look at the raw data it holds up, we aren't just talking about game sales anymore.
Right, not just units moved.
Exactly. We aren't talking about how many copies the new shooter sold. We're talking about how a single AAA release creates this massive shockwave that redirects literally billions of dollars in capital across the entire supply chain.
And to make this concrete, we are going to deep dive into three specific games that are mentioned in the report. We've got Nioh 3, Resident Evil Requiem, and the Dragon Quest VII remake. The source actually calls these Japanese technological time bombs.
Which is a very dramatic term, but honestly accurate. Because these aren't just games anymore. They are live stress tests for the world's silicon supply. So our mission today is to track that
All
money.
right.
We are going to follow the flow of capital from your thumb on the joystick all the way to the green ticker tape on Wall Street.
Okay, but before we get to the specific games, we really have to unpack this hardware supercycle concept. The report leads with something it calls the singularity point. Now, usually when I hear singularity, I'm thinking of robots taking over the world.
Skynet, basically.
Yeah, exactly. But they're talking about economics here, right?
AR. But it's an economic shift driven entirely by a technological one. Think about how hardware demand used to work. For the last decade or so, it was pretty linear.
You bought a graphics card and it drew pixels.
Right. Better card, more pixels.
Yeah.
Demand grew at a steady, predictable pace. But in early 2026, we've hit a wall, or rather, a collision.
A collision between what exactly?
Between traditional legacy rendering and this new thing called local AI inference.
Okay, local AI inference. We hear AI thrown around for literally everything now, from toasters to traffic lights. What does it actually mean inside my console?
It's a fundamental change in how an image actually reaches your eyeballs.
Yeah.
For 30 years, a graphics card was basically like a really fast painter. It drew every single pixel you saw one by one.
Just brute forcing it.
Total brute force.
Yeah.
But in 2026, the card is more like a director. It draws maybe 30% of the scene and then uses AI local inference to hallucinate the rest of the frame in real time.
So the hardware is just guessing what the picture should look like.
Predicting is the better word. It's projecting. It's
Yeah.
upscaling the resolution. It's generating intermediate frames, cleaning up noise, all via AI models that are stored locally right there on the silicon. And here is the catch that is just going to burn your wallet.
Oh boy.
If your card doesn't have the neural brains to do that, hallucinating the game doesn't just run slow. It doesn't run at all.
Wait, hold on a second. You're telling me a card I bought just 3 years ago, which cost me a mortgage payment, by the way, is basically e-waste now?
Yep.
That sounds like a marketing pitch designed to force me to buy a new card. Is the report actually backing this up with real engineering data, or is it just hype?
The report is surprisingly brutal on this exact point. It says high-end graphics silicon has morphed from a luxury option into an absolute architectural prerequisite. Your 2023 card might have the raw horsepower, but it doesn't have the life support systems, the NPUs needed to run the software. It specifically calls out native 4K and full path tracing as the killers here.
So effectively, we're looking at forced obsolescence.
In the eyes of the market, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that forced obsolescence is fueling two specific titans right now.
Yeah.
NVIDIA with their Blackwell chips and AMD with their RDNA 5 architectures.
Because every time a cinematic trailer drops with those impossible lighting effects, it's not just marketing the game.
Exactly. It is acting as a glossy sales catalog for NVIDIA and AMD.
And the report lists some specific technical drivers for this, too. It's not just quote-unquote better resolution. We're talking about photorealistic textures and real-time fluid dynamics.
Right, and those fluid dynamics require massive computational power.
Thanks.
Which directly benefits TSMC, the folks actually making the transistors, and ASML, who build the ultra-complex machines that make the chips.
It's a cascading effect.
Exactly. You want pretty water physics. You need to pay TSMC.
Here is where it gets really interesting for me, though. The report dives into case studies to prove this flow of money. And the first one is a game I have personally been waiting for. Neo 3 from Team Ninja.
Ah, yes. The section they titled The Physics of Destruction.
That's the one. Now, Neo has always been about tight combat, right? Samurai action, managing your stamina. But the report says Neo 3 is doing something different that's absolutely freaking out investors in a good way. It mentions dynamic destructible environments.
Which sounds standard, right?
Yeah. I mean, we've had destructible environments since Battlefield. We can blow up walls. What is actually new here?
It's the granularity. In the past, if you blew up a wall, it broke into preset chunks. It was essentially a magic trick. But Neo 3 is simulating the physics of the material itself. The report highlights a specific mechanic called localized fluid dynamics and wind simulation.
Which means what in gameplay terms?
Okay, picture this. You swing a massive, heavy Odachi sword. In a normal game, the sword creates an invisible damage box. In Neo 3, the game is actively calculating the air displacement of that steel moving at 80 miles per hour.
No way!
Yes. So if there is fog in the room, the fog physically swirls around the blade. If there are reinforced bamboo shades nearby, they shatter along the exact trajectory of your swing, not a pre-canned breakpoint.
That's what dynamic blood trails.
Exactly. Deep dynamic blood trails that react to the wind and the swing.
Okay, that sounds incredibly cool, but also incredibly expensive in terms of compute.
It is a mathematical nightmare. To do that at a sustained 60 frames per second requires a constant stream of floating point calculations that would just choke a standard CPU to death.
So this is why they call it a technological time bomb.
Right, because it exposes the critical weakness in any system that relies on older shared memory architectures.
So how does this connect back to the Wall Street money?
Synergy. Neo 3 is apparently architected from the ground up to synergize perfectly with AMD's custom APUs, specifically the ones inside the new consoles like the PS5 Pro Max.
The PS5 Pro Max, I still laugh at that name every time. It sounds like a laundry detergent.
It really does. But the branding works. The point is, the game relies on AMD's RDNA 5 architecture to handle that intense physical destruction without dropping frames.
Oh, I see. So when Sony broadcasts a commercial showing Neo 3 running at 120 hertz on 4K screen, smooth as silk.
That is the money shot.
The money shot, right.
That broadcast drives billions of dollars to Sony, obviously, but also straight to AMD. Because that software visually proves that the new hardware is strictly necessary. If you want to see the fog swirl, you have to buy the console.
Okay, so that is the physics angle, but let's move to the second case study because this one actually scares me a little bit. Resident Evil Requiem.
Capcom's latest big bet.
Right. And the key word here in the report is spatial immersive horror. Now look, I am a total chicken when it comes to horror games, just on a normal flat screen. But the report says Capcom is basically betting the farm on VR and AR for this one.
They absolutely are. They have drastically upgraded their internal engine, the RE engine, which is now called REX, to push for seamless compatibility with the PSVR 3, the MetaQuest, and even the Apple Vision Pro.
I'm sorry, you want me to strap a $3,500 ski mask to my face and let Capcom just scream at me in 4K? That sounds less like gaming and more like an expensive heart attack.
It is incredibly demanding on your heart for sure, but especially on the hardware. Think about the math required here. If you are in VR, you aren't rendering one flat screen. You are rendering two completely distinct, ultra-high-definition 4K images, one for each eye.
And you cannot let the frame rate drop right, or you physically get sick.
Precisely. The technical hurdle here is massive. They have to lock it at 90 hertz to prevent what the report calls vestibular disconnect.
Vestibular disconnect. That sounds like a serious medical condition.
It basically is. It's a fancy way of saying your inner ear and your eyes get into a fist fight.
Mm.
Your eyes are telling your brain, hey, we are running down a dark hallway.
Mm.
But your ear says, nope, we are sitting completely still on a couch.
Oh, right.
And if that frame rate dips even for a microsecond below 90 hertz, the illusion stutters and your brain pulls the emergency brake. That is the nausea. It's a biological rejection of bad software.
That sounds like it would melt a normal graphics card just trying to sustain that lock.
It shoves even flagship GPUs into a relentless frequency meltdown, according to the source. But here is the massive economic ripple, the micro-OLED explosion.
Micro-OLEDs, who makes those?
To get that level of visual fidelity inside a headset without the screen door effect, you need advanced screens with incredibly high pixel density. The success of Resident Evil Requiem is fully expected to trigger a massive spike in demand for micro-OLED displays.
So who wins that financial lottery?
Sony, again, strangely enough, since they manufacture extremely high-quality micro-panels, but also the makers of pancake lenses over in Taiwan and China.
It's so ironic, isn't it? Capcom creates this absolutely terrifying spatial nightmare, and investors on the other side of the world are smiling because it's selling millions of expensive lenses and screens.
It is the perfect example of a core lesson in this 2026 economy. Premium software sells prohibitively expensive hardware. Capcom is practically financially coercing you to upgrade your gear just so you can be terrified without throwing up.
I feel coerced just talking about it, to be honest. Let's pivot to something a little safer, or at least a bit more nostalgic. The third case study is the Dragon Quest VII remake from Square Enix.
Ah, yes. The nostalgia economy. This is a fascinating pivot.
I love the anecdote in the report about this. It mentions that the Japanese government historically used to ask Square Enix to only release Dragon Quest games on the weekends because otherwise the local economy would just grind to a halt.
Right, because everyone called in sick, just mass absenteeism.
Exactly. Entire offices empty. But this time around, the stakes are even higher financially. The report says this specific release is surgically tethered to the launch of the Nintendo Switch 2.
And this is a really crucial piece of market strategy. The Nintendo Switch 2 has a rumored price tag of around $600. That is a very steep ask for a family-oriented console.
Yeah, that is serious money. That's a car payment for a lot of people.
Exactly. So to justify that expense, you need what the report calls megaton gravity. You need a game that is so compelling, so deeply ingrained in the culture, that people just open their wallets without a second thought.
And Dragon Quest VII is that game?
A 100-hour epic, entirely rebuilt from the ground up in Unreal Engine 5, using that gorgeous HD2D aesthetic. It is that gravity.
So it's essentially the ultimate killer app.
The report actually calls it a defibrillator for Square Enix's stock. You know, Square Enix has struggled quite a bit with some Western-centric projects recently. Their stock, which trades under TYO9684, has been really volatile, but Dragon Quest, that is the safe bet.
Right, because hedge funds and big investors, they generally hate risk.
And the nostalgia economy is the safest bet there is in entertainment. Investors know for a fact that millions of people have a deep emotional tether to this specific franchise. They're currently projecting 15 million units sold just in the launch week.
15 million.
Right. And that immense wave of liquidity stabilizes Nintendo's stock while simultaneously rescuing Square Enix. It's a completely symbiotic financial rescue mission that is cleverly disguised as a role-playing game.
Okay, so mapping this out. We've got physics destruction forcing you to buy AMD chips. We've got VR horror selling high-end micro OLEDs. And we've got pure nostalgia selling a $600 Nintendo console.
That's the local hardware layer, yes.
Right, but we have to talk about the hidden layer, because the report gets very futuristic in its final section, talking about the shift to the agentic economy.
This is arguably the biggest fundamental shift outlined in the entire document. We are moving rapidly away from scripted interactions and directly into generative interactions.
This is about the NPCs, right? The non-player characters in the game.
Yes. The townspeople, the shopkeepers, the enemies. We are abandoning the old way of doing things. In the past, if you walked up and talked to an NPC in a game, they operated on a very rigid decision tree. If the player says A, the NPC responds with B.
It was essentially just a script, the classic, I used to be an adventurer like you until I took an arrow to the knee, just looping ad infinitum.
Exactly, a static playback. But now in 2026, we're seeing the massive rollout of generative AI NPCs. These are dynamic characters completely powered by large language models. And these models don't just read scripts, they have massive context windows.
Meaning what for the player?
Meaning they actively listen. They actually comprehend the context of what you're doing in the world and they reason based on your unique history in that specific save file.
Okay, so if I'm playing an RPG and I accidentally or intentionally burned down a village 3 hours ago, the shopkeeper in the next town over might actually know about it and just outright refuse to serve me. Not because a developer scripted that exact scenario, but because the AI comprehends my actions.
Correct. The AI generates that dialogue and behavior completely on the fly based on your systemic reputation.
That sounds absolutely amazing for immersion. But I'm looking at the follow the money section of the report here, and the economics of that seem circular. My home console cannot possibly do that kind of LLM math locally, right?
No, absolutely not. A home console cannot handle that inferential load alone. The report explains that this massive computational burden is ported out to centralized cloud compute clusters. We are talking about the massive data centers run by AWS and Microsoft Azure.
So let me make sure I have this value cycle straight. I am playing the game in my living room. I walk up and talk to a random NPC. My console then sends that dialogue data to a server farm somewhere in Nevada.
Right. Amazon or Microsoft instantly processes it. It is what the report calls the inferential loop. Every single time you ask that digital shopkeeper a question, your console sends a packet to a data center. And that data center has to physically spin up a GPU to generate the NPC's answer.
And that costs real electricity and real compute time.
Exactly. So chatting with a video game character actually costs real-world money. Every single generated sentence is essentially a microtransaction, but it's paid for by the game publisher directly to the cloud provider via API calls.
Wow.
The report estimates that a standard 100-hour RPG could easily generate $15 to $20 in pure server costs per player.
That completely upends the traditional business model. I mean, you buy the game upfront for $70, but you are actively costing the publisher money every single hour you play it.
Which is exactly why the report heavily suggests we're going to see a massive pivot towards subscription models, even for single-player games. But the real financial winner here isn't the game publisher at all. It is the cloud provider.
Amazon and Microsoft.
Right. They are essentially collecting a mandatory tax on every single conversation happening inside the metaverse.
And what do they do with that massive influx of tax money?
They turn right around and reinvest that capital into buying what?
More silicon.
More NVIDIA chips. It forces the New York Stock Exchange to rotate at what the report calls hyper-accelerated velocities.
It's a perfect loop.
It is. The more you play, the more the data centers burn energy computing your dialogue, the more capital they generate to buy more chips.
That is just wild to think about. It is like every casual conversation I have with a fake person in a video game is triggering a microtransaction on Wall Street.
That is effectively the primary conclusion of the report. Gaming has officially become the highest consuming industry for cloud-native AI.
So bringing this all back down to earth, what does this actually mean for us, the listener? The quote-unquote "teching game vanguard," as the report calls the enthusiast crowd. If you are just a person who wants to sit down and play some games, do you really need to care about what the Tokyo Stock Exchange is doing?
You might not care about the exchange itself, but you absolutely need to care about the supply chain it dictates. The report actually ends with a very specific, actionable strategic directive for consumers.
Which is what?
If you are planning to upgrade your PC rig, or if you are planning to buy that 10th generation console, you need to do it in the first half of 2026.
Why the rush? Why not wait for a holiday sale?
Because there's a massive storm coming to the supply chain. You have the combination of these massive software releases acting as catalysts. You have the insatiable demand from data centers for AI chips to run those NPCs. And you cannot forget the crypto AI miners who are always constantly hungry for any hardware they can get their hands on.
So we are essentially looking at massive price wars.
Violent currency and supply chain fluctuations. The report warns that if you wait until the end of the year to upgrade, you might end up paying double the MSRP. Or worse, you simply will not be able to find the stock anywhere.
That is incredibly solid advice. Get in and get your hardware before the digital zombies completely breach the gate.
Precisely. Secure your local compute while you still can.
You know, going through all this, it really fundamentally changes how I look at my entertainment setup. I used to just see it as a toy, a way to unwind. Now I look at the glowing box under my TV and I see a live terminal that is hardwired into a global financial machine.
It really raises a provocative question to end on, doesn't it? Every single time you swing that katana in Neo, or every time you choose a dialogue option in Dragon Quest, you're actively creating a billion-dollar echo on a trading dashboard somewhere in the world.
It makes you wonder, are we actually playing the game or is the global economy playing us?
In 2026, I think the data shows it's a bit of both. We're all just nodes in the network now.
Well, on that slightly existential note, we are going to wrap up this deep dive. Check your PC specs, keep an eye on the market, and maybe just maybe buy that graphics card sooner rather than later. Thanks for listening, and we will catch you in the next one.